live. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN Radio. And Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting, relationship expert, and host of a podcast called Better that he co-hosts with his wife, Julie Duffy. You can find that on WGN Plus and wherever your favorite podcasts are found. How are you, Dr. Duffy?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We were going to talk about grief, one of my favorite things, as Bill pointed
out. Wendy loves the grief.
I heard that. That was a very entertaining discussion.
Very
I didn't know you liked grief so much, Wendy.
I am a huge fan.
Did you read Wendy's book, Good Grief? It's such a great read. Good summer read, John.
I'm going to pick that up this summer.
I will say that I have had a lot of grief in my life. My dad died when I was 10. I had a bunch of old, they were old great aunts that passed away, large family. And when my dog Tiki died, that was the first time my kids really experienced anyone close to them, albeit a pet.
Right.
And they said, you know, wow, Mom, you've got a lot of practice with grief. And I said, it hurts every time. You don't get used to it.
Right. And you can't really judge what's going to hurt more than something else. I remember my father grieving his dad, and it really affected him in a minimal way. When our dog passed away when I was in eighth grade, he was a wreck, and he was down for a week, and he judged himself for that for the rest of his life. And, you know, there's been some research done in the past 50 years that says, you know, the judging doesn't really help a whole lot. You know, like we all grieve differently. We've tried to, as psychologists, put grieving in a box where it's like, oh, you go through these five stages, it's really linear, and there's very little research to support that anybody ever goes through this in a linear fashion.
Do me a favor, go back for a second. Why was he so, he was disappointed? Is it because of the way he handled it? Is that what was disappointing him?
Yeah.
He was embarrassed.
I think he thought, like, he was embarrassed. He thought, like, wow, this, my dad must be a much bigger loss than the dog.
Right.
Why am I feeling that? But there were different circumstances in his life. When he was younger, he was raising kids, he had to get to work, And by the time our dog passed away, he was in a different point in his life. And so he could afford this degree of grief that he couldn't have afforded earlier in his life.
Yeah. Do you sometimes hold things back? Like, my father passed away when I was 10, and in sophomore year in high school, I had three friends die in a private plane crash.
Uh-huh.
And that, to me, I was more upset over that because they were young people, and then I felt guilty that I didn't feel that way for my dad. But I feel like, can you hold it up until it's released at a later death?
Definitely. I mean, that's the remarkable thing about grief is we all do it differently, and even individually within us, we do it differently. And so we might grieve one loss, and it happens immediately, and we absolutely fall apart. And for other losses, we might go months with thinking, you know, well, I don't think this is going to affect me. I think I'm fine. And then we fall apart, you know? And then as a third kind of note there, some cultures structure grief. You know, I worked with a Greek Orthodox family, and they had lost their grandmother. And literally for a year, it's determined how you're going to grieve. And there's these ceremonies every kind of month or so along the way that kind of drives how you grieve and how you let go of it at the end of the year.
And there's no right or wrong, because, Bill, I remember when Don Rickles died, it was like you got punched in the stomach.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you met him once, you were a fan of him forever, but that's normal too, right?
Is it normal? I hope it is.
It is.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
Lay this, down, Bill.
This is something else I think we judge ourselves for, is we grieve the loss of people we don't necessarily know really well. What got me thinking about this was Senator McCain and how many people felt so strongly. And I had a client on Monday who was like, why am I so affected? I didn't know this man. I don't really know exactly what his story is. And yet I'm broken by the loss of this guy. And I think it's just okay to feel like, well, I really honored this person. I don't know their entire story. And so I'm grieving them. And you can be several degrees of separation away from somebody who passes and still feel a great deal of grief from them. And I don't think there's any need to judge that.
What about this? What Wendy said is true. There have been people, now Mr. Rickles I only met the one time, but Gene Wilder I never met. I had a week after Gene Wilder died where all I could think about was, oh no, he's gone. It's so sad. You know, I love that guy. But then there have been a couple people, most notably John Belushi and Freddie Prinze, who, as I was grieving, I was also angry at them for kind of destroying their own lives.
Being careless.
Yeah. And Robin Williams, too, I got to be honest.
Right.
So what goes on there?
So we like to think that grief is linear, right? I feel sad because this person's gone. I'm going to miss them. But grief is really, really complex. And anger is a part of it we often want to dismiss because it feels wrong. This person's gone. I can't even express it toward them. But most of us, when we lose somebody, we feel some degree of anger at them.
Yeah.
And I think it's really helpful to express that to someone. You know, because otherwise you hold on to that, and grief kind of gone unchecked, even that anger piece can lead to something like depression or anxiety or something more severe.
Yeah.
Jim's uncle Trent, who listened to us regularly, he's lived in Corinth, Mississippi. Trent Holder passed away, and he had not been in great health for a while, but this just happened recently, and most of his friends are in Corinth, so that's where the memorial happened, and we will do a mass here in this area. But my boys, it's not finalized to them because there was no service. They've just said, we're not going to see Uncle Trent again. That totally sucks, but it's not sinking in.
This is becoming kind of a trend where people are saying, you know what, don't do much for me. I'll already be gone. Come and see me when I'm alive, and skip any ritual, any ceremony, wake, funeral, whatever. Forgetting that that's not for the dead, that's for the living, right? This is our ritual in order to get past things. So sometimes you can be right there in Mississippi, is that where Trent was? And you can memorialize him in the ritual where, you know, people are talking about him. Here, your boys might want to do something different. They might want to have a little ceremony on their own. They might want to plant a tree or, you know, do something, some ritual that kind of seals things up so that they feel like they can kind of assimilate the loss and move on with their lives.
Bill, I know you don't like wakes or funerals.
No.
And it is something to just kind of finalize. It seals the deal to let you know they're gone.
Right.
And it isn't for the person who passed away. It's for their family.
And kind of like, I think the visual, especially, you know, people have an aversion to the open casket. And, you know, and I share that too. And yet that visual kind of finalizes the reality, right? You know, because you've probably both talked to people who've said, I don't believe it. I still picture that he or she is going to be walking down the street and I'm going to see them. But there's something about that moment where you go and you kind of stand before that coffin or that urn and you realize, okay, this is a real thing. I have to accept it.
As much as I understand that, my argument is, with the limited space I have available in my brain, I like to think about them alive and vivacious and moving around and doing things as opposed to that last thought of them in the casket.
And it's hard to forget that
so
sometimes.
So hard to forget
it
that.
It is.
So hard.
And I think way too often in our culture, because we have a lot of ritual, we forget to honor the entirety of somebody's life. We define them by their last moments, especially a guy like Belushi, you know, some of these guys who took their own lives or had a tragic ending of some kind, right? We forget like, oh, there's this body of work and there was so much joy that they brought us, and we don't necessarily always focus on that. We focus on, oh, what a shame, what a tragedy. Robin Williams was 62 years old or something like that, had this massive body of work we still enjoy.
Sure.
And so we could still celebrate his life while still grieving his death.
Yeah, you know? Makes sense.
Yeah.
Dr. John Duffy's here. We're talking about grief. If you want to join in, 312-981-7200, you can call us or text us there. It's Bill and Wendy. More after this on WGN.
We've got our bi-weekly. Is it a bi-weekly visit?
I think it's bi-weekly. I think that means every other week, not twice
semi-weekly
a week.
Semi-weekly would be the opposite. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Dr. John Duffy is here. We are talking on the heels of John McCain's passing. And, you know, you had talked about Don Rickles and Gene Wilder, Bill, like when they passed away, you experienced deep grief. I was like that with Tom Petty.
Were you?
That just, I loved all his music. I grew up listening to that.
Yeah.
It just shocked me. Suddenly is what's so hard to deal with, but you think about it, it's probably better for the person who's passing away.
Oh, for sure. Right. And it's interesting because we have different reactions to people who die suddenly out of the blue. Tom Petty, right? Versus John McCain, where we've had time to kind of think about that and assimilate that before the fact. So I get the idea, you know, the Tom Petty thing, that's a shock. And so the whole grief process starts that day. And the first thing you have to work through is that really happened, you know, like, and, you know, like, then it just doesn't really make sense in what you're used to thinking and believing.
John, how in the world do people who have lost a child ever get over that? I can't imagine how you pull that off.
It's so brutally difficult, and I think any parent listening that I've ever worked with that lost a child would say you do not get over that.
Yeah.
You've got to find a way to move past it. You have to find a way to live. But that sits with you virtually every moment of every day. And my mother, as you know, lost a child.
Sure.
And the way she kind of worked through that is to work with other parents who lost children. And I think a lot of parents end up doing that just because nobody else understands what that's like, mm-hmm. you know? And that whereas a lot of losses we can kind of really assimilate and move forward with our lives, that's one where I think you have to kind of recognize this is going to be with me. This is going to be with me on a daily basis for every day until the end of time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Catherine has called us, 312-981-7200. Catherine, hello.
Hi. I hope I can keep it together. So if I start to cry, I'm sorry. But
no problem.
My husband passed away. Amazing man. Incredibly loved. 34 years of an amazing marriage. Went down in my kitchen with our son there, and I just can't get the scene out of my head of him passing away. And it's been 2 years now, but it is always with me. How do I move on?
Yeah, I totally, first of all, I'm so sorry for your loss, Catherine. I think we all are.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad you had him for 34 years because he sounds like an amazing guy.
He was amazing.
Yeah. And so one thing I would recommend, and I don't know if you've had the opportunity to do this, is to sit down with a professional who is used to dealing with grief and loss and talk it through, because I wouldn't expect anybody who has had a partner for that long to be able to just move on from it. I can imagine that that image just sits with you, and there is probably a way in working it through, talking it through, and focusing on some of the great times that you had preceding that moment, you know, to kind of put it in context that might not make it necessarily like something that you can just put behind you, but allow you the space to move forward, if that makes sense.
Does it make any sense if I said it feels like the air was kind of taken out of the world?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's actually beautifully put. And I think the best tribute you could probably bring is to bring the air back into your part of the world. You know what I mean? So if you can find a way to live your life in honor of the time that you spent together and in honor of your husband, what a way to bring some of the air back into the room and into the world.
Thank you.
And Catherine, I know it feels like there's a hole in your heart, because that's really what it feels like. And ultimately that hole gets filled up with funny moments and lovely moments, and you go, oh, he was, what a funny guy that guy was. But it takes time, and 2 years is not too long. Everybody, it varies, doesn't it, Dr. Duffy?
It varies a lot, and I don't
want... It feels like it was yesterday.
Oh. I'm sure it does. And 2 years is a very short period of time, especially in the context of all the years that you spent together. And you know, I'm going to say the cliche that this does get better with time, but that doesn't mean you have to let him go, because sometimes we fear that, oh, if I'm not thinking about him all the time, somehow that memory is going to slip away. That's not been my experience. I think you can still hold on to him.
Just one more quick question. Sure. I haven't had the courage to move his clothing and shoes and everything out of our closet yet. When do I get the nerve up to do that?
My bias would be to talk to somebody before you even think about that. That's something that can sit and wait as long as that doesn't bother you a whole lot. I've worked with some people who have done that for a decade, have decided, I really don't want to move anything for a while. I want to feel familiar in this space. I want to feel him here. And if that helps you feel him there, then that's okay, you know? But I suspect that there will be a point somewhere in your life where you're going to want to really kind of create a ritual where you move on from that as well.
Thank you. I'm so sorry to trouble you, but thank you for the great advice.
Oh, my gosh, not at all, Catherine.
It's no trouble. Catherine, we wish you the best, and we wish you strength.
Thank you.
Good luck, Catherine.
Oh, it's so hard.
Yeah. Real quick, John, I know we don't have a lot of time, and this deserves more time, but how normal is it to grieve years later and at various moments and just cry when you think of a person or events? That's an ongoing process, isn't it? There's no right or wrong time for that, is there?
Couldn't be more normal. And I actually think that's a great way for us to viscerally honor somebody when, you know, a memory strikes us or a visual strikes us.
Yeah.
You know, my dad loved vintage cars. And about a year ago, I saw this this mile-long Lincoln that I just said to my wife, you know, oh, man, Walt would love that car. And I fell apart for a minute. Yeah. And we pulled it back together. And it felt like, okay, he's with me for that minute.
Yeah.
And we can honor him. So if you're going through that, even years later, decades later, that is really healthy, actually.
Yeah.
I can only imagine, because you almost feel like you don't want to forget that person and you'd be mad if you forgot them. So I feel like these moments happen to remind you, oh, yeah.
Right. And that's why we share some of these moments and the fun ones, especially with our kids, right? We want to keep that memory alive.
Wendy and I have discussed this so many times where around a birthday or a holiday, Mother's Day, you'll be walking in a shopping center and in a corner of your eye, you'll see in a window some clothing piece that you go, oh, perfect for my mom. I'll just pick that up. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yep. We forget sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a really, really normal phenomenon as well. And it's okay to have that reminder in your mind. And keep in mind also that anniversaries, where you might have a time of year where you're like, you know, well, I lost somebody in the fall. And every fall I start to feel this little ennui, this little depression.
Sure.
And that sometimes is just an artifact of an anniversary of a loss. And it's okay to take a moment and honor that loss.
That's the key is, it's like at first when it would happen, especially with my mom around Mother's Day or Christmas or her birthday, I think this is a bad thing. But it's not a bad thing.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all. No, I mean, I worry more when that doesn't happen, to be honest. Yeah.
And, you know, the stages of grief, as you mentioned, it's not linear. You can hit some stages at different points. And there's no time limit, right?
Not at all. Nope. And it's okay to move back and forth between those stages for a lifetime. Most of us probably will.
Is there a book you recommend? You haven't written about this, have you?
I have not written about
this. But is there a book that you'd recommend for this?
The seminal work on this is by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. It's called On Death and Dying.
Yeah.
It's a really good book. The caveat is to read it all the way through to the end, because she's added this addendum that suggests you don't have to go through this in a linear fashion. And this doesn't have to be about you dying, the loss of your life. It can be about the loss of somebody you love, or a pet, or a career, or even youth, you know, like she kind of broadens it quite a bit.
Right.
And again, Elizabeth
Kubler-Ross. Yes.
On Death and Dying.
Yes.
You're awesome. Dr. John Duffy, if you need to contact him, what's the best way to do it?
DrJohnDuffy.com.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.